Oscar. Oscar, for the 20th, maybe even 30th time since he got here, is lost in the Medina. The problem this time is that his phone has died, so he can't use it to navigate, and he has no cash, having given it to a man whose wife was dying and needed medical care. A man who, in retrospect, might not have been telling the truth. The Medina is a maze as mysterious to Oscar as the many branches of his own misfiring neurons. Circlings, dead ends, occasional unexpected connections. Above it all, the call to prayer, rising and undulating in a language he can't interpret. Which means Oscar can't have grown up here. Useful information. One country, Morocco, ticked off the list. 194 to go. Everyone says you can navigate Marrakesh by using the main square and the minaret of the Koutoubia Mosque as reference points, but the minaret isn't usually visible from the ground, and while getting to the square is easy, leaving it to go somewhere else isn't so simple. Oscar ends up arriving back at it over and over again, until the snake charmers and orange juice salesmen stop calling to him and look suspicious, as if he is wasting their time. In the end, he gives up. He'll just have to get a taxi and get fleeced. He's also going to have to go to a cash point. There's no way round it. He thought he'd be able to avoid it for a bit longer, that noisy machine, telling tales. When the screen lights up and bleeps, he wants to cringe away. "Here you are," it says. "I see you." At least, he thinks, this machine is at the opposite end of the Medina from the last one. If someone wants to search every street for him, they can go ahead. The thought cheers him up. 100 entrances, 1,000 blind corners, 1,000,000 or thereabouts, heavy studded doors set in blank, lumpy walls. Oscar takes out as much money as the cash point will allow. He avoids looking at the balance on screen. Another thing he doesn't understand. Another thing that frightens him. All that money. Oscar doesn't think about the money, if he can possibly help it. It's a strange place, Oscar's hotel. It looks like a dictator's palace. Like the kind of place you'd see on TV getting turned over during the Arab Spring. He can't walk through it without hearing the ghostly cries of revolution. It feels temporary, as if the chandeliers, the velvet cushions, the giant bronze sculpture of a lion attacking a camel are all already halfway out the door, hoisted on the shoulders of looters. There they go, down the road, like the dancing furniture in that Disney film, to the sound of singing, the occasional gunshot. Oscar's never been in a revolution. Not to his knowledge, anyway. Though it is exactly the kind of thing he'd get accidentally involved with. Someone would hand him a placard or a machete, and off he'd go, in over his head, as per usual. A memory comes back to him. "This isn't the first time you've got into trouble," said a woman. There was a folder in front of her. Oscar tried to read it upside down, but she closed it. She didn't sound particularly angry. She just sounded sad at all the trouble Oscar had been getting into. Who was she? A teacher? A policewoman? But no, no uniform. But the sense of her, of that talk, is drifting away, turning to fuzz. He sees the woman in a corridor. It's not a school. There are too many adults around. But the harder he tries to remember that moment, the less grip he has on it, like squeezing a rubber ball until it shoots out of his grasp. "Oh," the receptionist says when she sees him. "There have been calls for you, Mr. Levy. One moment, sir." calls. Unwillingly, he crosses the slippery marble floor to the desk. The receptionist smiles at him, says,
"Excuse me for 1 minute,"
then disappears through a door. What calls? Oscar wonders. Nobody should know that he's here. Calm, he thinks to himself. Calm. He considers turning and walking straight out of the hotel before the receptionist comes back. Except, he remembers, his passport is in his room. Fuck. The receptionist gets back, smiles again, and hands him a mock croc folder. The excess ceremony. The 5-star insistence on hiding everything in folders and under silver lids isn't calming. Each of his fingers leaves a dark sweat print on the leather. The names inside aren't any he recognizes. Are they the same names as before? He can't remember. The messages are brief and polite. Why are they always polite? It seems like a strange, nastily delicate way of messing with him. Like the leather folder, slipping in his wet paws.
"We didn't have any instructions regarding callers," the receptionist says.
She looks wary, as if Oscar's about to start upending gilded chairs. Why is she wary? What are his eyes doing? They could be up to anything, staring wildly, darting shiftily, glaring psychopathically. Is that a word? If only he could see what they were doing, maybe he could stop it.
"I wasn't expecting calls," he says. "But I should have known they'd find me."
"They?" she asks, looking confused. Was that a weird thing to have said? Yes, yes it was.
"Oh, the world,"
he says, trying to sound like a jaded businessman avoiding the office. He's never been very good at impressions. Another thing to tick off the list of stuff Oscar might have been in his former life. Actor.
"Oh, right," she says, and smiles. "Would you like to leave us instructions now?"
"Right, yeah. If you could just tell whoever calls that I've already checked out. Thank you."
Her smile is ghostly thin now.
"But some of the callers said it was urgent."
"They're lying," he says quickly.
"No, this isn't good." The smile is gone.
I mean, they always say that. You know what people are like. Everyone's urgent to themselves.
But it seems like this isn't quite the right thing to say either. He is sounding less and less like a jaded businessman every minute. And so he stops talking. Why is the receptionist staring at him? Oh, right. He hasn't given her an answer that makes sense yet.
"Just tell them I've left, please," he says. I am busy. I am not, I repeat, not to be disturbed."
He says this with all the businessman authority he can channel, then turns, almost collides with a chair, and flees. Later, Oscar lies in the sun, facing away from the pool, towards the hotel gardens, with their dazzling flowers, strange foliage, monster outer space cacti. There's a sound of splashing behind him. He ignores it. Most of the other sunbeds are drawn up almost to the water's edge, like chairs pulled up to a fire. Like it's a view, not a flat turquoise rectangle smelling of the death of millions of microorganisms. In fact, the only other person who hasn't fallen under the spell of the pool is a little kid. He's sitting on the grass not far from Oscar, playing on some handheld thing. Oscar glances at him, and the kid looks up. They share a look. There's something amused in the kid's expression. Like somehow he knows Oscar isn't really a man lying by a pool on holiday.
The kid's look says, hey, it's okay. I'm not really a 9-year-old playing on a handheld device either. Oscar feels like this kid gets it. He smiles at him.
It's meant to be warm once you're in it,
the kid says. He's American, or maybe Canadian, hard to guess which, and guessing causes offense, so Oscar doesn't. The kid indicates the pool behind them.
But I don't believe them.
You don't swim? Oscar asks.
What's the point?
I'm the wrong person to ask, Oscar says. I haven't been in a pool for a long time, I think. But he has. As he says it, he remembers it. The chemical-scented turquoise of it rippling over his skin. A few years ago, in Spain. It obviously didn't bother him then, the water. But now, he feels a little sick quiver travel up his body. It's in his throat for a moment. Then it sinks away.
You don't have to go in, he says.
One of the other kids said he'd throw me in, says the boy. But he's gone home now, and he never did.
He sounds almost wistful.
You've got no brothers or sisters? Oscar asks.
They're not here. That's my mom.
Oscar follows the jerk of the kid's head across the water to a sunbed with a tanned foot hanging off it. Presumably the body attached to it belongs to the kid's mother.
My name is Atticus,
the kid says. That's quite a name.
It's awful. But it's from a famous book.
Is it? I don't read much. I'm Oscar.
What are you doing here, Oscar?
Asks Atticus. Oscar studies him. Is Atticus all he seems? But surely they wouldn't send a small boy to spy on him.
I pretend to be sunbathing, he says.
Atticus laughs. Then he gets up.
I have to go, he says. Will you be here tomorrow?
I don't know. Probably.
Then I'll probably see you tomorrow.
Memory is a strange thing, floating in the water like a jellyfish, gelatinous, both sticky and slippery, translucent, venomous. A couple of years ago, Oscar wrote down everything he knew about himself in a notepad he'd bought for the purpose. He stalled after filling half of the first page. He realized the notepad was a pointless purchase. He could have fitted his autobiography on the back of a receipt. Name, Oscar Levy. At least passport says so. Age, 28. See above. Lives in England. In late teens, went to school there. No fixed address since then. Early years equals ? Likes, animals, people, music, Monty Python films, TV shows about weird facts. Dislikes, licorice, jazz, water, bodies of. Why? Drinking water equals fine. Has something wrong with brain? What? Has a lot of money? How? Has memories that don't make sense? Gun, white room, men in suits. People are looking for him. See above. He tore out the piece of paper and kept it for a while, to check that he wasn't forgetting more stuff. But then it began to depress him, this 92-word life story, and he threw it away. Oscar can't remember anything at all before he was about 16. After that, the memories start appearing in an unpredictable stop-start way, like a sputtering tap, until his early 20s,
after which he can remember mostly everything. He thinks he can, anyway. There's no way to know for sure. One of his clearest early memories is of being 17 and hanging out at his friend Lonnie's house. Lonnie's dad was American, had been a rock star in the 80s. Big hair, sparkly leggings sort of thing. This was when Oscar was at the boarding school for rich people's children. Oscar isn't sure why he was at the school or how long he'd been there. He wasn't a new boy, he knows that much. He'd had a different accent from everybody else, a non-rich accent. So his parents, who he can't remember, probably weren't rich. But he didn't have the money back then. Not yet. This was before all that. So who was paying the fees? He doesn't feel like he's smart enough for a scholarship. The whole thing is very confusing. Anyway, Lonnie had a gun. Oscar found this out on a day when a few of their friends were at Lonnie's dad's house in the country, sitting in the garden. Lonnie's dad was away. It was a calm October afternoon. The sky was grey and quiet and minding its own business, but Lonnie, unmoved, took aim and shot it. Oscar, who'd been facing away from the French windows Lonnie had just strolled out of, had no idea what had happened. Except he also did. He heard a sound he couldn't have identified, and yet he understood what it represented. His body knew it on a deep and instinctive level. Not that an evolutionary theorist would agree with that, but how else could you explain Oscar throwing himself off his chair, his hands over his head? Nobody else had reacted like Oscar did. Drinks were spilled, someone exclaimed shit, and someone else, everyone denied it being them, let out a shrill squawk. But when the ear noise had died to a slight hum, everyone looked at Oscar. "You okay, Ozzy?" someone asked. "Did you see him? That was like some fucking SAS shit. He dropped and rolled." Ninja reflexes. The rest of us just did a ninja piss in our pants. Lonnie was piqued at this, came back over and put the gun down on the table to remind them what the main event was. "Where the fuck did you get that?" "It's antique. My dad's. Totally illegal. He got it off someone who knew Jimi Hendrix." "Maybe it's the gun that killed Jimi Hendrix." "Was he shot?" "Yeah, think so." "I thought he committed suicide." "That's Kurt Cobain. More than one person's allowed to commit suicide, you know." Oscar picked up the gun. It was so old that the metal bits were covered in a curly filigree pattern. The handle was made of wood. If he were better with words, he'd have tried to think of a limerick. Lonnie, Lon, fun, gun, run, done. "There was a young man called Lon who stole his father's gun." "Careful," Lonnie said, taking it away from Oscar. "You got a weird look in your eye, you know that?" "There was a young man named Oscar." But nothing rhymes with Oscar. Sound works interestingly in Marrakesh. It sits low, unable to clamber over the high roofs of the riads or find a way into the gardens of his hotel. In those walled spaces, only the birds can be heard, the clinking of the silver teapots. Then Oscar leaves the hotel. He's going out now to buy a book, a Rubik's Cube, anything to occupy his thoughts. And the city hits him like a train. Carriage after clattering carriage, swaying and spilling over with patterned ceramics, braying donkeys, barrels of spices, pierced brass lanterns, leather bags with their rich smell of shit and tanning, designer knockoffs, curly-toed slippers. A smell of burning and grilled lamb and exhaust and incense. Oscar's head is wall-less. The sounds and smells pour right in and fill it up. Then one voice cuts suddenly over the others. It's a flinty little home county's, "Excuse me!" And it goes straight into Oscar's ear and sparks up a memory of another. "Excuse me! Excuse me! Hey!" This is a known memory of Oscar's. It wasn't that long ago. She'd come up to him, this girl, in a club. Oscar was 19 or 20. He had taken a pill someone had given him, then another, and his good time had risen, then tipped slowly. He watched it happen, helpless, into a bad time. The club was underground, and the surface felt a long way up. The music crashed against him. He felt like he was in a metal bin being beaten by a giant. The girl trying to get his attention looked as wired as he felt, white and shiny with sweat. "It's Oscar, right?" she shouted. He was startled and didn't reply immediately. She came closer to his ear, became louder. "Do you remember me? Teresa, Lawrence's sister? Lawrence, from school?" Oscar's understanding came slowly. He nodded before it had fully arrived. "I can't believe you're here," Teresa shouted. "I mean, nobody knew what happened to you after school. I mean, you were like, so... shit, I'm embarrassing myself now. And when you just vanished, it was like, devastating. We used to wonder where you were. We used to make up stupid stories. Everyone thought you might have... Anyway, she was going to say died, Oscar realizes. Her hand is still on his arm. She's drawn him outside. How? Into the quiet night air. "I'm talking too much," she said. "But I just have so many questions. What are you doing now? Where do you live? God, I can't believe I'm here talking to you. I almost want to take a picture of you. I mean, the others might not believe me otherwise." "I don't think you need to do that," said Oscar, alarmed. Then Teresa started telling stories of Oscar, first-hand or second-hand or maybe not even true. The time Oscar jumped onto the bonnet of a passing car. The time Oscar came to school on LSD. The time Oscar passed out drunk in art class and had to be hidden in the cupboard. All the time, Teresa's hand was on his arm like a magic spell of compulsion, like Oscar couldn't move while that hand was there, though he wanted increasingly more desperately to throw it off, to twist away. He didn't remember any of her stories, except for the car, though in his memory, he didn't jump, he was hit, and this freaked him out. Remembering the way the windscreen had cracked like a frozen lake, the groan of glass crushed against glass. "Excuse me," says the present-day voice again. He returns to the Medina, locates its owner. Narrows it down, anyway, to a trio of English girls. Sunburnt nose tips, messy ponytails, harem pants. They have a day two look about them. "Yes," he says. "Hi, sorry to bother you. Could you please point us in the direction of the main square?" This is the middle girl speaking. The other two are half a step back, flanking her. If they were a girl band, she'd be the one about to leave and go solo. "I can show you," Oscar says. Can he? He hopes so. "I'm going that way anyway." "Are you sure? We've been trying to get there for like half an hour, and we're out of change so we can't tip anyone." "I get it. It's this way." Thank you so much. The girl falls in next to Oscar, and her two friends follow on behind. You must think we're pathetic. He glances at her. Pathetic isn't a word that has occurred to him. He guesses she said pathetic for the benefit of her friends, with whom she's clearly impatient. She's enjoying herself, they're not. One of them is obviously pissed off, and the other jumps whenever a moped gets too close to her. Chill, they're like pigeons, says the girl next to Oscar, back over her shoulder. They won't hit you. I once saw a pigeon fly into someone's head, says her friend. It's perfectly safe, isn't it? The lead girl says to Oscar. Tell her, won't you? Oscar, who has been clipped by several mopeds and had his foot run over, nods. He says, just watch out for the donkey carts. I'm Jess, by the way, the lead girl says. Oscar. Hey, why don't you join us for some food, Oscar? We're just going to get a sheep's head. Oh, come on. This aimed at her friend. I'm joking. Sure, says Oscar. Why not?
What's that necklace?
Atticus asks. Oscar opens his eyes. He's been dozing under a tree a little way from the hotel pool, sleeping off the large amount of lamb he's eaten. The blinding green of the grass dazzles Oscar's fuzzy eyes. He blinks. Still, better over here than gazing out over the surface of the pool, the lace of light weaving, shifting over it, the tiny, waving arms of bugs drowning. He gets stressed, hoping someone will fish them out in time, but doesn't want to attract attention by doing it himself. Maybe he could get Atticus to do it. Nobody questions a kid like they question an adult. What? Oscar says.
What's that necklace?
Atticus repeats. Oscar notices he's pulled up a lounger right next to Oscar's own. Oscar's fingers go up to the necklace. It's a thin gold thread with 20 knobbly gold lumps attached to it. He guesses the lumps are meant to look like gold nuggets. He's had it for as long as he can remember, but he has no idea where the necklace came from. He gets asked about it so often, though, that it was easier just to come up with a story. Story meaning a lie. The problem is that lying to Atticus, a child, seems worse to Oscar than an adult-on-adult lie. Maybe that's because adults already exist in a twilight world made up of half-lies, delusions, things left unsaid, outright fraud. But meeting Atticus's eye, like he does now, and telling him, "It was my mother's. I kept it after she died," feels like a bad thing. Like he's taken the kid by the hand, led him one man-sized step down into the shadow realm.
Oh, Atticus says. Sorry.
Don't be, man. I can't even remember her. At least this is true. You've got a book today, Oscar observes, to change the subject.
I meant to read it for school. It's boring.
What is it? Maths?
I like math.
Really? Good for you. Maths is important. I've never understood it myself. I do like fractals, though. There's this thing called Koch's triangle that has an infinite perimeter but a finite area. Try thinking about that when you're stuck. Just try thinking about that. Anyway, if I were good at maths, I'd be a professor of fractals. But I'm not. Atticus has got closer and closer to Oscar's sun lounger and is now leaning in, mouth slightly open. It seems Oscar's uselessness has mesmerized him.
What do you do?
He asks. I lie on sun loungers, says Oscar. Ha, huh, he thinks. Lie, in both senses of the word.
No, what's your job?
What are you, the FBI? Oscar aims for a jocular tone here. The tone falls somewhere between jocular and alarmed. The effect is odd. Hang on. What do your parents do? They're not in the FBI, are they?
My mom's a real estate agent. My dad's in futures and derivatives.
At least estate is real, Oscar says. Derivatives are not real. Futures are definitely not real.
Can I tell him that?
No.
Okay, I won't tell him. If you tell me what you do.
Fuck. Jesus Christ. Okay. Oscar looks around. What might he do? Pool cleaner? Gardener? Hotel manager? Sun lounger repairman? His gaze falls on Atticus's book. I design book covers, he says.
But you said you don't read books,
Atticus says. You really do remember everything, don't you? Oscar says. Well, book cover designers don't have to know what's in them. In fact, it's better if you don't. Atticus's mouth opens, clearing the way for another question, no doubt. But at this point, Oscar's phone rings. It makes him jump. But it's okay. It's the girl from the souk, Jess.
Oscar! So, we're coming to your hotel this evening. How fancy is it? Will they let us in flip-flops?
Anya says she's only got flip-flops. They're gold, though, apparently.
What? He doesn't need to know that. Oh, for fuck's sake. With Diamante detailing. Anything else? No? Well, if the gold flip-flops with Diamante detailing aren't as impressive as Anya seems to think, could you sweet-talk someone?
Oscar doesn't try to explain that his days of sweet-talking the receptionists might be over. That lately, they've started looking at him with... what? Curiosity? Suspicion? He can handle a few strange looks, just about. It's not as if they're going to kick him out, is it? Not with the money, he promises, even if it is lumps of soft and dirty money from the cash machine, not the high-level spiritual communication the hotel would prefer between his microchip and theirs. Microchips. Who else was the hotel's chip talking to? Because that's it, isn't it? That's how they found him. They probably already knew he was in the city. The cash points would have ratted him out. But after that, it must have been the card at the hotel that first day. Oscar had thought he was being clever, booking the fanciest place in town. Imagining them hunting for him in all the dusty corners while he sat on the terrace in the full sun, drinking his strawberry daiquiri. But when he arrived with his cash, all ready to pay in advance, the receptionist said they still had to swipe his card, just to put him on the system. Oscar asked what happened to the card details once they were in the system. They reassured him that nothing would go on the card unless there were outstanding bills after he left. But nothing else, he asked? The card details don't go anywhere? They didn't understand. Your details are safe with us, Mr. Levy. Mr. Levy. He didn't like having to be Mr. Levy. Not here, not anywhere. He felt his shoulders drawing in, as if to protect him from Mr. Levy, an unwelcome arm slung over his shoulder. Hello, mate, I'm Oscar Levy. Why don't we buddy up? You're stuck with me now, so you may as well. But maybe strange looks is all it is. He sends a silent prayer up into the hard blue sky. A plea for strange looks. that the receptionists just think Oscar's a bit weird. That's all. They've done what Oscar said and told the people calling him that Mr. Levy has checked out. They haven't got talking to the people calling, or asked them who they were, or why they're looking for Oscar. They don't know anything more about Oscar's life than he does.
Oscar? You still there?
Says Jess.
Yes, flip-flops are fine, Oscar says. Cool. So what's your room number?
That's where the four-way will be, right?
Oh, for fuck's sake, Anya, I'm joking.
We'll see you in the bar, Oscar. Call you later.
Oscar takes the phone away from his ear. He looks at it with interest. He realizes Atticus, who has moved to sit next to him, unnoticed, is doing the same thing. Did Atticus overhear any of that? But no. It's the phone itself that intrigues him.
I've never seen a phone like that before, he says.
That's because it's a cheap, pay-as-you-go, non-smartphone, says Oscar. The other day, suddenly paranoid, he'd swapped it for his iPhone, to the amazement of a street vendor.
A what?
Never mind.
Was that a girl?
Atticus says.
What did she say?
Never mind. Jess throws herself onto Oscar's bed, arms spread out across the heavy gold bedspread, cushions scattered all around her like she fell out of the sky, flung open the hotel bathrobe for wings. I love this place, she cries. She's wearing nothing but a pair of red pants under the bathrobe. Her nipples point at the ceiling, neat and cocky, like they have a right to be here. He suspects they do. She pretends awe at the hotel.
These bathrobes must be like 3 feet thick.
But there's something knowing about it. She's one of the rich people, really, albeit one who ate half a sheep's head in the name of authenticity. No wonder her nipples look so confident. They have sex, twice, before Jess falls asleep suddenly, as if she's been hit on the head. Oscar finds himself awake and alone. His mind twitches, wanders. Here and there it goes, forwards, sideways, and finally backwards, ending up with the gun. Oscar stole Lonnie's dad's gun. He doesn't remember why. He does remember. Guiltily, Lonnie's agitation when he found out it was gone. It had to be someone at the party, Lonnie insisted, but nobody took that seriously. They were making jokes about Cluedo, guessing who among them was the killer. Nobody guessed Oscar. Later, Oscar held the gun in his hands. It was cold and dense, like a dead fish. The filigree was agreeably textured under his own whirled fingertips. After a while of holding it, it got warmer, as if it was getting to know him. Why did he want it so much? Maybe it was just the law of Chekhov's gun. Once it had appeared, it couldn't just go safely back into Lonnie's dad's safekeeping, could it? No, that was against the rules. The gun has been shown. The gun must now fulfill its destiny.